This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning, TSN1290.ca. Good morning, universe. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jam-packed 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Coming up in mere minutes from the Record newspaper in New Jersey, Andrew Gross is going to join us to talk about the New York Rangers. Later on this hour, we are going to be joined by Joe Beninati, the play-by-play voice of the Washington Capitals, to talk about the changes that team has made, hiring Barry Trotz as head coach, promoting assistant general manager Brian McClellan to general manager. And then in the final hour of the show from NHL.com, he covers the Los Angeles Kings. Curtis Zupke is going to join us in between now and then. We will have you completely covered on everything going on in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Of course, last night, the fantastic Game 6 between the Chicago Blackhawks and the LA Kings. And it's only fitting that that series is going to go to 7 games so that we get to see more of what has been one of the best playoff series in years. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, before we get much further and before we bring in Andrew Gross, a Merry Jetsmas to both of you.
Yeah, good call. Third year anniversary.
Oh, really?
Of, May 31st.
Winnipeg Jets coming back to Winnipeg, and you know how I love to celebrate. That's just another...
any excuse, Ezzy.
Any excuse, and this is just another reason to celebrate. It really doesn't feel like it's been 3 years. When I think of, 3 years ago, it kind of feels like time has gone really fast, but, here we are, going into the draft, heading into the fourth year, and... time flies.
3 years wiser you are, Ezzy, of course, since that date.
Right, yeah, absolutely. I don't make the same mistakes that I made back then, and absolutely.
Great to have the team back. I mean, yeah, you think about it, 3 years, that is a fair amount of time. Mm-hmm. Has gone by quite quickly. So this is going to be an interesting summer for the Jets, I think the most interesting summer yet for Jets fans since the return of the team, and should be interesting to see what the team does in the offseason.
Absolutely.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We say good morning to our good friend from the Record newspaper in New Jersey, Andrew Gross. Andrew covers the New York Rangers, and he's going to be covering a Stanley Cup final. Andrew, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. How are you guys doing today?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, actually. With the Rangers waiting to see who they're going to play, catching up on a little bit of sleep now for the last 2 days. It's been nice.
Not a bad way to do it now, because once next Wednesday hits, I don't think you're necessarily going to be able to do much of that at that point in time.
I think the madness will. The Rangers were off of practice yesterday. They're off today. They started up again tomorrow, and then we travel Monday. It's just a matter of which city we go to.
Absolutely. Andrew, you go back 1 year ago, May 29th, 2013, the New York Rangers fired John Tortorella. May 29th, 2014, they win the Eastern Conference over the Montreal Canadiens. Is Alain Vigneault the biggest change between those two teams in that one-year span?
He's the boss, and he's kind of changed the tenor of the organization, in terms of, the atmosphere in the room and just the confidence the players have in themselves. It's just a different way to run a hockey team. Elaine kind of gives them more space and shows tremendous patience and trust with the players and, lets them run their own room, and the veteran players there have really responded to that. I mean, there are other reasons, obviously. Chris Kreider is blooming into the all-star player that we thought, he would when he first signed out of Boston College. But a lot of that is he's been shown patience and trust and allowed to develop. Matt Zuccarello is playing at a much different level than he played with his first couple of times here. Playing under Tortorella. So, it all kind of manifests itself. Coach gets a lot of blame when things don't go well, but you know what? When things do go well, he should get the credit.
What about the Martin St. Louis trade, Andrew? I mean, that was a trade that the Rangers gave up a fair amount. I thought it made sense for what they were trying to do in a relationship with Richards and the need for I think, some scoring help. Gave up some draft picks, and we see the way kind of Ryan Callahan played in the first round against Montreal. Obviously not his fault that they lost, and the fact that the Rangers are giving up, you know, more value in terms of picks because they make it to the final. I'm sure Glenn Sather would do that trade 100 times out of 100 now, but is he proven right a little bit more after the results in the first three rounds?
Well, yeah, you would have to say so. I mean, the fact that they're going to the Stanley Cup final is the most important thing of all. I spoke to Marty after the game, after game six the other night, and he said, this is what I believed we could do when I came here. This is part of the reason why I wanted to come here, is because I saw this potential in this group. I mean, there were other reasons. Obviously, mm-hmm. he had grown disgruntled in Tampa Bay and wanted out of there. But, you know, he has sort of wanted to come to the Rangers for a while now. You know, he has a home up here in Connecticut, and he was asked if he believes in fate, that, you know, all those other stops and starts when we thought he might be coming to the Rangers and he didn't, and now this is the time he's coming. He said, yeah, I do believe in fate, and I do believe this was exactly the right time to come. As you mentioned, this has turned into two first-round picks and Ryan Callahan, mm-hmm. who the Rangers were going to lose anyway, so you're really trading a rental player. But, you know, two first-round picks is kind of a heavy load for a player, but if you get to the Stanley Cup final, then you know what? It's either going to be a 29th or a 30th round pick this year, so that conditional second rounder is still kind of like a second rounder in a way anyway, mm-hmm. but you know what? Glenn Sather's always been a gambler in his life. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And in this instance, you say it worked.
Andrew, as was mentioned earlier, the Rangers defeated the Montreal Canadiens on Thursday, and they're going to have 5 days off before the Stanley Cup Finals start. I guess a two-part question here. How important are these 5 days off for a team that has played so much hockey in the first three rounds of the playoffs? And looking at the Western Conference Finals, is there a team that the Rangers would rather play between the Kings and the Blackhawks?
You know what? The first part is, yeah, I wrote before they played Game 5 up in Montreal that even though it wasn't a must-win game for them, it sort of was a must-win game just so they could be guaranteed some rest, because you know what? They do need it. The playoffs, as everyone knows, is such a physical grind. It's such a mental grind. And just them being able to step away here for two games, you know, it worked out well for them that this Blackhawks Kings series is going seven, which it didn't really look like it would when the Kings were up 3-1, which is why I wrote that, you know, probably game five in Montreal might have been a must win for the Rangers, which turned out wasn't, since they lost that one game six, still got their time off. But you know what, they're going to be a very rested team, and I'll tell you what, you know, game one on Wednesday, if they play Los Angeles, they'll almost be the better off team with the travel, you know, because Los Angeles is going to play Sunday in Chicago, and if they win, have to come all the way back and then, you know, kind of turn it around on short notice to get ready. As to which team is a better matchup, that's a really tough question, just based on the fact that, you know, both the Blackhawks and Kings, the last two Stanley Cup champions, are very, very, you know, as we've seen, tough outs and really skilled teams. I think both are deeper than the Rangers. Both probably have a little bit more talent than the Rangers. You know what? The one spot you look to is in net, which is where you always start in the playoffs. And you know what? Maybe Henrik Lundqvist gives you a little bit more of an edge over Corey Crawford than maybe a Jonathan Quick, although the way Crawford played last night, maybe you don't say that. Rangers split two games with the Kings. You know, they won out there very early in the season when they were a different team. You know, they played well. They won in Chicago, too, this season. So, you know, if I'm the Rangers, maybe at this point I say I want to play the Kings just because the Kings are going to have to travel back to L.A. after playing a Game 7 in Chicago. But, you know what, other than that, it's really a toss-up.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Andrew Gross. He covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey.
You know, Andrew, when you look at the finals and the options, you have the Kings, who, if they do win, will have played 3 7-game series, and the Rangers, who will have played 2 7-game series and a 6-game series. You talk about travel, the rest, and all that goes along with that. Do you think the fact that maybe LA didn't travel too much in San Jose and Anaheim will later on be possibly a benefit for them, as opposed to the past years when, say, they played New Jersey in the final?
Yeah, probably. I mean, those were, in terms of travel, like you said, those were two, quote-unquote easy series for them, although, coming back from a 0-3 deficit can't be, easy, certainly. Mm-hmm. But, and the Anaheim series was just a, just a grind between those two teams. But yeah, for the most part, I saw the stat that this series with Chicago was the first time they had played or they had traveled outside California in like 4 or 4.5 weeks, something like that. I mean, there's got to be some benefit to that. On the other hand, I mean, if you play Chicago there, the travel for either the Rangers or the Blackhawks, that's not a bad trip. That's, an hour and 45 in a plane. That's pretty easy to do. So, Yeah, the Kings are going to be, pretty worn down through 3 game 7s to get to the Stanley Cup final. At the same time, I mean, if they do get to the Stanley Cup final, do you really, everyone here in New York is talking about the Rangers' resilience after coming back from 3-1 against the Penguins in the second round. But the Kings also have that intangible of you can't be beaten if they do get past the Blackhawks in the Game 7 in Chicago.
One question for you too, Andrew, because I find it interesting. The Rangers have maybe surprised, not maybe, they've surprised people for sure, and hockey observers and the top hockey analysts out there will say they're surprised by the Rangers' run. They played Philly, and Philly has some flaws, obviously. I think speed is probably the biggest issue there, and they look at the Habs maybe too small, a little bit emotionally done after beating Boston, and then coming back and beating a Pittsburgh team, which now seems to kind of be in shambles. Let me ask you this. Are the Rangers that good?
Yeah, if you get to the Stanley Cup final, you are that good. It doesn't matter who you've played. You have to have certain ingredients to win 3 playoff rounds in the NHL. Bad teams, for the most part, I would say, don't do this. But are they a great team? No, they're not a great team. And you know what? You could probably say that about either the Kings or the Blackhawks. The Kings would be in the Stanley Cup final second time in 3 years. Blackhawks, pretty much a dynasty in a salary cap era if they can win the Stanley Cup this year, 3 in 5 years. I mean, I don't know how many times you're going to see that under salary cap constraints. So, I would call those two great. And the Rangers are a very, very solid, well-managed club with a, superior goaltending in Henrik Lundqvist. He's on his way to a Hall of Fame career, obviously. And Ryan McDonagh has kind of transcended into that next level of defenseman where you're talking about him, in the super elite of defensemen in the NHL. So they have that going for them. And they have 4 balanced lines, which is kind of the key to playoff success. But, if you're talking about their run through the East, I think they were given it was a huge benefit to them when the Canadiens knocked off the Bruins, because even though the Canadiens, were not a great matchup for the Bruins would not have been a good matchup for the Rangers. So, if you're pointing somewhere, that's the place where maybe you say, the Rangers got a break going through that bracket.
Yeah, Andrew, you mentioned some of the teams that the Rangers have gone through, and some pretty good teams there, and they made the Montreal Canadiens look pretty average. And when you talk about John Moore being suspended and not playing in the Game 6, and then Rafael Diaz comes in, and they basically limited the Canadiens to minimal shots, and you mentioned Ryan McDonagh and how well he's played with Girardi, and I think you'd agree that Strahlman and Staal have been excellent. Yeah. How important has it been that they're playing at such a high level? When you hear all about the elite defensemen that the Hawks and the Kings have, I think maybe the Rangers' group of defensemen has been a little bit underrated this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you look at one reason, if you had to take one reason why the Rangers beat the Canadiens, and in the end, you know, beat them pretty handily in six games, you know, including winning the first two up in Montreal, so they never really played from behind in that series. You look at the two groups of defense, and the Rangers, you know, the Rangers six, whether it was with Diaz or John Moore, just simply outplayed the Canadiens six. I mean, the Canadiens were somewhat of a disaster in their own zone, you know, in terms of, you know, at times breaking out or just defending. It was such a marked advantage for the Rangers in that series, and that's, you know, that's why the Rangers, you know, moved on, is because they just, like you said, Ryan McDonagh reverted to the level he had played at in during the regular season after suffering a late season left shoulder injury. He kind of, you know, rounded back into form, and what a form he's got. And, you know, Anton Stralman and Mark Stahl, like you said, I mean, before Ryan McDonagh came around, everyone, you know, was just, you know, gaga over Mark Stahl's play as number one defenseman for this team. And obviously he suffered through two horrific injuries, you know, between the concussion and that, you know, losing some of the sight in his right eye being hit by a puck. But he's come back, and, you know, on other teams, Mark Stahl could be a number one defenseman. You know, his play in his own end is that good. He's kind of lost something in the offensive zone after the injuries. But, you know, defensively, he is just, he's a force back there. So, you know, the Blackhawks and Kings obviously both have great defensemen, but, you know, it's not an area where the Rangers are going to be outclassed, that's for sure.
Final question for you, Andrew. You have a great article up this morning, last night, on Glenn Sather and how he built the New York Rangers. And we speak to defense and, you know, the contract. Some people don't realize Ryan McDonagh's under contract for the next, what, 5 years at $4.7 million, which is one of the biggest bargains in the NHL. Sather's been there for a long time, as you mentioned in the article. Is this kind of, you know, this is obviously, they make it to the finals, this is his moment. We don't really see much of him, as you allude to. You know, he doesn't really do much press, although you've seen him quite a bit on the TVs, at least in Canada, you know, throughout these playoffs with his cigar and kicking his feet up.
Yeah.
What do you make of Glenn Sather at this point as compared to when he came there, you know, the late 90s and spent a boatload of money, and how he's evolved?
Yeah, you know, he, as I tried to paint in that story, in the article, he is, you know, in some ways he's very much the same Glenn Sather, because he, you know, his personality doesn't change. It's sort of the same guy he was in Edmonton, except, you know, he's not really given the freedom by his garden bosses to talk as much. But there certainly has been some changes. He was, I think, a little more headstrong in the way he ran things when he first came to the Rangers, and he did spend wildly, and he did spend poorly when he first came to the Rangers. Now, it was pointed out to me that when Glenn came to the Rangers, kind of the cupboard was bare. You know, there were not many, you know, there was not much young prospect talent coming up through the pipelines, and Glenn felt like he had to attract talent to New York somehow. And you know what? There were deep pockets through Jim Dolan, and Glenn spent it. It just turned out he didn't spend wisely. I think he's done better because one of Glenn's strengths is, you know, listening to other voices. And, you know, sometimes people in that seat of power have an ego where they say, you know, only my way or my opinion matters the most. And Glenn really isn't like that. He likes working within a big group. And you know what? He works really, really well with Jeff Gordon. He works really, really well with Jim Schoenfeld. He's working really, really well with Alain Vigneault, who was a guy that he, you know, Vigneault didn't know Glenn. Glenn didn't know Vigneault. And even though I don't want to call it a forced marriage, you know, but it was kind of an arranged marriage, and it's worked out really, really well. Those two guys, you know, communicate very well and have a respect for each other. So, yeah, Glenn's kind of, you know, it's been a different team since the lockout, and that was imposed by the salary cap. And also, you know, I know I'm rambling here, but the one thing I mentioned in the article, and I don't think you can overestimate is the effect that Tom Rennie had on this franchise, both coming here and kind of revamping the scouting system and, you know, player personnel in his first job, and the job he did both as an assistant coach under Glenn and then when he took over as coach here. In a lot of ways, he's very responsible for changing the culture here and making it, you know, a more professional workplace, I would say.
Andrew Gross covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. He's a frequent guest on this program. Andrew, thanks very much for doing this, and enjoy the Stanley Cup Finals.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much, and have a great day.
You too, Andrew. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ryan McDonough's on it, 8 seconds to go. And it is cleared up by McDonough. Subban at his own line, 3 seconds left. He'll shoot it down the ice, and the New York Rangers are headed to the Stanley Cup Final for the first time since 1994.
Courtesy John Bartlett, TSN 690 in Montreal, the final call for when the New York Rangers defeated the Montreal Canadiens 4-2, making them the first team to qualify for the 2014 Stanley Cup Finals. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gentlemen, you know, it was a... After the first two games and Carey Price went down, everyone sort of figured the Canadiens were done for. But, you know, it certainly wasn't Dustin Tokarski's fault that the Montreal Canadiens lost that game and lost the series.
He was very good.
He was very good. You know, I do think that the biggest difference, because those two teams are very close to, you know, talent-wise, I think the biggest difference is two things. One, the depth that the Rangers have on defense. And secondly, I think that the emotional letdown that Montreal had after playing Boston was the biggest reason that they couldn't match the New York Rangers.
Well, and I think Price is in there, Drew. Because
Price is in there, too.
Because
sure.
Like, not only is it the fact that he's way better than Tokarski, it's the mental letdown when you lose one of the top five goaltenders in the National Hockey League, in my opinion.
Right.
And when you know that he's not there and you have to play to an extra level to ensure that you give yourself a chance... Then I think that just kind of part of that, you know, it kind of feeds into the emotional letdown that is a result of the Boston series. It also comes with expectations and veterans. There's still a fair amount of veterans on that team, but you also have, you know, some younger guys on the squad too, and you do on the Rangers, but it just seemed like Montreal was more of the happy to be there than the Rangers were. And I'm not really sure why that is, because expectations for both teams weren't especially high coming into the season. More, they were higher for the Rangers than they were for the Habs, but I mean, they weren't especially high for the Rangers. So I just thought that the series, the Rangers skated with Montreal, and I actually thought that they outskated Montreal, which was a big factor too. Montreal got fed a little bit of their own medicine, and they didn't like it. And, you know, as you mentioned, the defense, and then you have, I mean, Lundqvist Price is one of the best goaltending matchups in the NHL. You never saw it, really. I mean, you saw two periods of it, and that was it. So,
mm-hmm. Well, you talk about the goaltending. The goaltending can't be ignored in this series. And we knew that Henrik Lundqvist was going to respond in Game 6. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the last time that Henrik Lundqvist was pulled. Maybe we can look that up. But you don't see Lundqvist pulled in games a lot. And Cam Talbot came in Game 5. And you knew that he was going to respond on home ice. And, you know, he obviously got the shutout. I knew he wasn't going to let in more than one or two. And that was obviously a factor. But, you know, back to the defense here. And we just talked to Andrew Gross about Ryan McDonagh and his partnership with Dan Girardi and Strahlman, and, you know, John Moore goes out. John Moore, by the way, was excellent up until that point, and obviously,
well, it's a good series for him, right? He's a great skater. Yep. He's able to be physical against a team that isn't overly physical. It meets his criteria in terms of being able to kind of impose his will a little bit more.
And he's not flashy, Richie. He's not a guy that you're going to notice on some nights, but very solid, as you mentioned. Very good puck moving defenseman. But that group of defensemen has shut down a lot of talented teams this year and in the playoffs. You're talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins, and we talked about this. The Rangers, it's not like they were exploding offensively against the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Penguins couldn't generate offense. And you're talking about McDonagh right now, who I think, I said this.
You generate offense from the outside, not from the inside.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's tough against a team like the Rangers when they're so structured, mm-hmm. and that has carried over, you know, the shot blocking and all that from John Tortorella, but this is still an elite defensive team, and I think, you know, a lot of focus is on Lundqvist, and he made some spectacular saves, absolutely. But in Game 6, the Montreal Canadiens, everything, as Richie mentioned, is from the outside, smaller team. That's not conducive. That's a good matchup for the New York Rangers. And, you know, you talk about, you know, who would the Rangers rather play, the Kings or the Blackhawks. I would tend to think that the Blackhawks would be a better matchup.
I agree with you.
For the exact reasons we're talking about. The Kings are a big team. They're quick, but they have the ability to drive the net a little bit better. You're talking even guys like Toffoli and Stoll. So the Rangers deserve that series. And, you know, there might have been an emotional letdown, Drew, but the reality is PK Subban didn't have a good series. Andre Markov didn't have a good series.
I gotta say, that was another reason. Sorry to interrupt, Desi, but Subban is hurt. There's no way that he took that much of a drop off in play and wasn't hurt.
Yeah, and you have to believe that because of the way he struggled in his own zone, and he wasn't he got a few chances, he had some points, but the way he was struggling in his own zone, he wasn't the same defenseman. There's a good chance that we'll find out, you know, in the coming days and weeks that he was suffering from an injury.
We'll find out, and we'll obviously bring it to you here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to head to Washington. They made a bunch of front office moves, hired a new coach, hired a new general manager. We'll talk to their play-by-play man, Joe Beninati, about it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca here in Winnipeg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is illegalcurve.com. Trying to get a hold of Joe Beninati, Washington Capitals play-by-play man on CSN Washington, to talk about the changes made there in Washington. We'll bring them to you momentarily, hopefully. And for the time being, though, we'll discuss it. You know, the Capitals, they go out, they make one very logical hire in Barry Trotz as their new head coach. And then they make one very, what I would describe as a befuddling hire, in promoting assistant general manager Brian McClellan to general manager.
My question, though, is can you do number one without number two? Like, that's the question. Like, is it a good hire to hire Trotz and then hire the GM? Like, it's backwards. I don't understand why everybody's doing things backwards now. Keeping Bylsma and firing the GM. It's like, there's a lot of these teams. You have to wonder what's going on. Like, I guess in this case, McClellan had a say in Trotz being hired. But the time, and apparently if you read about it, he was told a week before that he was going to be hired, but it's odd to name your coach, then name your GM. Who's calling the shots?
Right, and looking at it the other way, Richie, you'd have to think that Trotz was also told that McClellan mm-hmm. was going to be hired, and that was a condition on him, not a condition, but that was part of his decision, if he was going to be okay mm-hmm. with McClellan being hired. And the reason why it's a little bit suspicious, not suspicious, I should say, surprising, is that Ted Leonsis has talked about change and how they were going to go in a different direction, and then you pick someone who's been with the team the last 12 years.
So. Close friend of George McPhee.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know anything about Brian McClellan. I'd be lying if I pretended to know anything about him, but, you know, does it puzzle you? You know, usually you hear some names that are bandied about when it comes to new general manager hires. And I've never once heard the name Brian McClellan as potentially being on the radar for any of the other 29 teams in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, did you know Alex Anthopoulos' name before the Jays hired him, really?
No, I didn't.
It doesn't mean it'll be any better or worse. It's just, I just don't particularly understand why you hire a coach before a GM. And even if you're doing it together, why you announce it at different times. The optics are very odd. Didn't it just seem weird?
Yeah, it certainly does. You're right. The same thing that's happening in Pittsburgh right now with Bylsma just, you know, sitting there, unsure of what's going to happen there. Yeah. And
They could be screwing Bylsma now because if by the time he gets fired, which I assume is going to happen, there's going to be no jobs available.
That's true. That whole situation stinks, and we've outlined it before. Now, there's talk that Pittsburgh might hire a general manager this coming week, but frankly, you know, it doesn't make any sense what's going on there. Barry Trotz is a fit in Washington. What do you think about that?
I don't know what to think about that. I mean, Barry Trotz's style and coaching ability. I mean, he obviously did some nice work with Nashville over his tenure there, but he didn't have much success. Now, granted, I think you have to take that in the context of who his players were. You know, you can't put his resume up against Mike Babcock because they didn't have the same talent base to deal with, and I don't think that's fair, you know, to compare the two. And that being said, he did have a couple teams that could have made a run, and they faded out. So, I mean, I think Barry Trotz is a good National Hockey League coach, but he's also a defensive coach. And the question I have is, and I think everybody else has the same question, will he be able to be flexible, you know, in respect of the Capitals' playing style? Because the players he has on his team, like Alexander Ovechkin, hasn't played defense since he came into the league. And I don't know if he ever will.
If Barry Trotz is successful in helping Alexander Ovechkin evolve his game into a complete game, not just an offensive game, that will determine his long-term success, because that's the key to the team. Alexander Ovechkin's under contract long-term, and we've seen Dale Hunter, Adam Oates, Bruce Boudreau fail. Maybe Barry Trotz is going to have a different outcome.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the play-by-play voice of the Washington Capitals on CSN Washington, Joe Beninati. Joe, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Guys, my pleasure. It's almost June, and we're talking hockey. That's okay in my book.
Yeah, absolutely. Ours, too. 12 months a year here. No surprise there at all. Joe, we obviously brought you on to talk about the changes that the Capitals made earlier this week, hiring Barry Trotz as head coach, promoting assistant general manager Brian McClellan to general manager. I want to start with Trotz first. In recent history, the Capitals have generally been hiring first-time head coaches. Adam Oates, obviously, was a first-time head coach in the NHL. Dale Hunter in the brief stint he was there. Bruce Boudreau before him was a first-time head coach. Was the veteran aspect of Barry Trotz as a head coach appealing to the Washington Capitals organization?
Oh, absolutely. I think with Ted Leonsis and Dick Patrick spearheading this search, I think it was almost a fact in advance that they were going to go for experience, that they weren't going to go the route that you had just outlined. So once Barry was available, there really was no other candidate for Washington's sake. From what we understand, ownership, upper management definitely wanted Barry Trotz and worked quickly to make that so.
Joe, who hired Barry Trotz?
I would say both Ted and Dick, and then ultimately with Brian McClellan in place, they let McClellan execute the hire. It was Brian McClellan, in essence, who was acting as general manager, got together a couple days with Barry in advance of the announcement. From what I am told, it was Ted and Dick and Brian as a concerted effort to bring Barry on board.
Joe, sticking with Barry Trotz for a second, he's coming into a team that obviously missed the playoffs and has struggled to get to that next level. What do you think he's thinking right now? Where does he begin with this team?
Well, he wants to see what he has. I think, fellas, we've all perhaps been a little bit guilty of, I don't know, overrating this team, overvaluing this team. I'm not saying it's a bad team, but I'm also not saying it's a great team. It's a nice, solid hockey club that should have made the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. That was the failing, and I'm sorry, guys, that's on the players more so than George McPhee and to a degree Adam Oates. The players have to understand now this is on you. And that starts with the captain and goes all the way through the entire roster. There isn't one guy on this squad right now who feels good about what they did last year. Not one, and they shouldn't. This team is built to go deep into a playoff series, deep into contention for a Stanley Cup, and they think that they're in a position to win. I firmly believe that was much better in 2009 and in 2010, but the fact that they fell so far short of their expectations this year contributed to all of these changes, and now to a degree this team has to refocus and look completely at itself in the mirror. Everybody on that lineup has to look, and I think Barry is going to just take a peek at what he has and be adaptable. I think everybody refers to Barry Trotz as a defensive minded coach. That was the hand he was dealt in Nashville. it's a little different here. Mm-hmm. And once he gets a chance to size up the roster and get a chance to at least speak with these players in an organized setting, I think he'll reevaluate and find the best avenue for this team to proceed.
Yeah, on that point, Joe, I think it's an interesting one. We had Ken Holland on the show last year, and we asked him, you know, when he hired Mike Babcock over from Anaheim, you know, what were some things that Babcock maybe needed to change? And he said one of the things was that Babcock always wanted to play north-south, and some of the players on the team were more the east-west type of players. Is it going to be kind of the reverse, do you think, for Barry Trotz here?
Well, I understand where you're going. Barry's going to demand some things from this team that haven't been shown on the ice for a while. And I just think, more than anything, is he going to be iron-fisted about defense? I think so, but not to sacrifice the offensive talents of the players in this lineup who are gifted. And we can go through the lineup and itemize those guys. He's going to ask that they play more of a two-way game and at the same time not sacrifice any of their offensive creativity. That's got to be good news to the likes of an Ovechkin and a Backstrom and a Kuznetsov, et cetera, et cetera. But those guys are going to have to be accountable on the ice. There's going to be more of, I think, the most eye-opening comments that were coming out of the Brian McClellan-Barry Trotz press conference concerned the off-ice and the workout and the conditioning aspects of this team. They're really going to crack the whip and expect this team to come to camp and be ready to really work.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca if you're listening online. Our guest is Joe Beninati, the play-by-play voice of the Washington Capitals on CSN Washington. Now, Joe, in addition to the Barry Trotz hire, the Caps promoted from within, promoting assistant general manager Brian McClellan to the head chair as general manager. Not really a household name in hockey circles, at least for us here in Winnipeg, certainly. You know, what can you tell our audience about Brian McClellan, as a hockey guy?
I guess I could start vis-a-vis George McPhee. It's interesting because Brian had been George's assistant general manager for 7 years, I believe, and prior to that had been involved in a number of different capacities, mostly related to scouting for the Caps. I want to say it's a 13-year relationship, which encompasses all of, or at least a good chunk of, George McPhee's time as the general manager. They were very good friends. They continue to be very good friends. I'm sure this was not easy for Brian to have interaction with George once everything was coming down the pipeline that he was going to be the man to take over. If I'm not mistaken, they were college teammates. But there is a difference, I think, in personality, and I would assume ownership is hoping in managerial style that Brian seems to be a little bit more black and white than George, who had a few more shades of gray in the way he was dealing with some people. And if Brian's initial press conference is any indication, he's not afraid to look people in the eye and give them a matter-of-fact assessment of what he thinks is right or wrong. And he went right up to, or right in front of, Ted Leontis and basically told him how he could be a better owner in with respect to helping this team be move further towards its ultimate goal. And to have that kind of chutzpah, that kind of courage, when you don't really have the job, all of us were looking at Brian and going, are you nuts? He goes, I had nothing to lose. I didn't think I was going to get the job. He obviously made a great impression upon Ted Leontis and Dick Patrick. And to me, I think he had an advantage, guys, and it must have turned out very well because, you know, Brian's been based in Minnesota. And the amount of times that I have had interaction with Brian, maybe during a year, might be 3-4 times a season. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Ted Leontis had ever spoken to Brian McClellan prior to the interview process. With him being based in Minnesota and reporting to George and reporting to the other scouting directors, etc. So I think this was initially a first blush kind of impression for Ted Leontis of Brian McClellan. And Brian had the added advantage of being in close contact with George, and I'm sure, whether it be down a phone line or in person in meetings or when they were traveling around, I'm sure Brian McClellan heard all of the frustrations of George McPhee, maybe with respect to ownership or upper executive management, and he took that and used it to his best ammunition to make the point that this is where we have to change as an organization. And all of a sudden, Ted Leontis' eyes opened and said, we may not have to go outside of our comfort base or outside of our own roster here to bring in a managerial candidate. A lot of skepticism was met with that reaction because just a month earlier, on a very sour and sad day for Ted Leontis, he said, we want to see new eyes. We want a new point of view. And everybody felt that that was an outside of the organization point of view. And as it turned out, he felt he has the right man right there already under contract.
Joe, as you mentioned, the Washington Capitals, even though they failed to make the playoffs this year, are still going to be built around Alexander Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom, and there's a good chance that Brian McClellan doesn't make any major moves. Is that even more reason why they decided to keep with someone that they already knew and had been working with the team for a while?
To a degree, but I do expect Brian to exact some change in this roster. I don't know exactly where the salary cap number is going to fall, but it sure does appear as if the Caps are going to have some wiggle room. And I am sure also that Brian McClellan may have some initial thoughts about the roster from last season as just moving and changing pieces. And there's been a lot of discussion on where Mike Green falls with respect to this club, and I don't know what Brian's opinion of Mike is, but there have been whispers that, you know, that's one area where they could start making change. You know, it's going to be a very interesting scenario to see unfold, but I do expect Brian to try and add to this roster. There's nobody who's happy with any of the status quo here, and it does look like they'll have some money to be able to change some roster pieces here and there.
Joe, you mentioned Mike Green. Brooks Like is another player that some people were talking about him potentially being a buyout. What did that say to you to see him at the press conference?
Brooks is the kind of player who I would firmly expect to be there. He's a brilliant speaker. Brooks has a TV deal in the making once he's through with his pro hockey. The second he retires, as far as I'm concerned, he's incredibly well-spoken, and I think he knows how to work the room. And in this instance, I don't think there was anything conniving. I just think he was there to be supportive, and that's all that I've seen from Brooks in the 9-10 seasons now that he's been in this organization. I think he's very much a team player, and I think he's very much wanting to see this team achieve its greatest success. It's difficult because for the last couple seasons now, ever since being injured in the last lockout, Brooks hasn't been able to be Brooks. And every coach who's worked with the Caps, and you lose track of them because there's a bunch of them.
It's been a lot.
But every one of them has said how valuable Brooks is to the effort when he can be Brooks. I spoke to him at the press conference for Trotz and McClellan, and he seemed to be in great spirits. He said that his body felt like he could really push it now, where he couldn't go there a few months earlier. So I'm expecting that this is going to be a very good offseason for Brooks. He'll come in like a tiger, ready to go in the fall.
You know, Joe, you said something interesting, I thought, earlier in the interview, and it was that some responsibility, or a lot of it, has to fall on the players, and you mentioned all the coaches that they've had. You know, at the end of the day, I look at this roster, and it's still Alexander Ovechkin's team. I don't know how many more coaches they can go through to try and change maybe some of the things that he does. Is he ever going to change, in your opinion, or does the team and new management and coaching have to build this squad with knowledge of that he will be who he is, and that's probably nothing that's ever going to change?
It's the $64 million question. and I'll answer it this way. I've known Alex since he was drafted, since he was at Verizon Center as, I believe, an 18-year-old, 19-year-old, looking out at the rink with his heart beating out of his chest in a midsummer's day. Can I go out and skate? Can I go out and skate? No, Alex, there's no ice there. He has such a passion for the game, and I know he's a rock star, and I know he wants the spotlight, and I know he loves to be the life of the party, but I've seen him grow up since 18, 19, till where he is now, 28, 29, and I've seen that maturity level rise. It's not risen to the level that we all want it. I think it's been an incremental thing. I, in private moments, when I get the chance to speak to Alex Ovechkin and there's no lights and there's no microphones, I think this hurts. I know it hurts him. And there are some people who believe, I know there's a growing sentiment of people who believe the Caps can't win with Alex Ovechkin. I don't know if I'm in that camp. I'll take that back. I am not in that camp. I wish they could build more around him. And I think if there's been any managerial failings in the last few years, that might be the case. Yeah, they've put a decent team around, a good team around, but not a great team around. And a lot of the times your hands are tied by salary cap matters and contractual matters. I understand that. But for me, I firmly believe that Alex does want to win a Stanley Cup. And if that's the case, he's got to change some of his habits. Barry Trotz is going to get inside of his head and ask him to do those things. And I firmly believe that Alex wants to win. He may be pulling the wool over my eyes, and if he is, then I've been fooled for years. But I get that sense when I talk to Alex that he is growing up, that he has grown up, and that this is hurting him. He doesn't want to be known as a coach killer. He doesn't want to be known as someone who scores 7,000 goals and gets nothing done as a team. I don't think that's what he wants as his reputation. I firmly don't. But, you know, the actions continue to happen, and people continue to point the finger and say he's not the right person to win with. Well, let's see. I think Barry Trotz is going to – I know Barry Trotz is going to try and take Alex very much under his wing and express to him how he needs to perform to get this team to play its best.
Joe Beninati is the play-by-play voice of the Washington Capitals on CSN Washington. Joe, thanks very much for doing this morning.
Hey, guys, anytime. You know that.
Take care, Joe. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Joe Beninati, play-by-play voice of the Washington Capitals. And before him, Andrew Gross covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. In case you missed any of those interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course, on IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Do we have an Illegal Curve sandwich yet?
We don't, but we'll sit down and talk to Beaner about that, obviously, in the coming weeks. But
after Gary Lawless got rid of our sandwich, the Illegal Curve sandwich, he actually ate all of the sandwiches.
There's just no more sandwiches ever?
But yeah, I still maintain, and I've talked to Huss, I was hanging out with Huss last night, I maintain that I am open to competing in a sandwich match where the loser of the match forces the other one to eat their sandwich.
I like that idea.
So that is, and you know, if you watch wrestling, the sandwiches would be suspended above the ring.
It's like a sandwich
ladder match? It's like a sandwich ladder match. And I've proposed this to Huss. He's in. He would be willing to be my manager.
So he's switching sides?
He's really? Switching sides.
Oh, interesting.
Well, actually, I think he'd be more like the celebrity referee. But I've told Gary many times that if he's in, we could raise some money for charity, and we could have some good food.
A bit of a tragedy happened at your house yesterday, Ezzy. Your fridge, of course, stock full with deli and produce from Bernstein's Deli, like you hear in the commercial.
Yeah, there's a lot of Bernstein's in there.
A lot of Bernstein's in there. Your fridge broke yesterday.
Yeah, we were out watching the game, hanging out watching the game last night. Huss, Dave Manuk, a few of us. And I get a text from my roommate, Hart, my good friend Hart. We own a house together. And he says that our fridge hasn't been on for the last 3 or 4 hours, and he had to take out all of the food. Now, I had some good stuff in there, some meat, some eggs, some pickles, I think some leftover pizza, a little Chinese food from a few days back. It's all gone.
I refuse to believe that Chinese food lasted in your fridge for more than for a few days.
That sounds like your diet, though.
It's all gone. And
so are we sitting Shiva after the show for your fridge? Is that
you got to go into Bernstein's and load up?
All I have right now is some bagels and a few other dry goods. But I'm going to be honest. When he texted me that, I bawled. I mean, it was sad. I've never had a fridge. And I don't know what it was. We were talking about this off air. Like, is it a motor or something? I might have to get a new fridge. We'll see. But right now, I am sans fridge, and it's just awful. Like, what am I going to eat? I have to eat all my meals out. I don't know what I'm going to do, I guess. So Yeah, it's tragic. It really is.
My heart goes out to you.
You don't really realize how
cholesterol goes out to everybody.
You don't realize how, like, I mean, running water is important. I'd almost rather have a fridge than running water.
You didn't have a shower head for three, four weeks.
Yeah, so. Exactly. That's true at that point in time. Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Western Conference. We talk about last night's Game 6 between the Kings and the Blackhawks, and then we get you ready for Game 7. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues, Ezra Refrigerator Ginsburg, Richard Pollock on my far left, producer Tim gets us on and off the air. Like the expert that he is.
By the way, Drew, I heard that when you were filling in for Hustler on Monday,
yeah,
you called Alex the expert that he is. Well, I don't like that.
They're both experts.
Not saying Alex isn't an expert, but I mean, you got to give Timmy has his own staple. You can't be sharing that.
You can't just call everybody expert. Yeah. The expert here, this guy's an expert, that guy's an expert. Everybody's an expert. Timmy's an expert.
That's right.
Alex is also really good
and
an expert.
Okay.
But, you know, you have to just be careful, you know, throwing out these titles.
I'll admit it. I panicked in the heat of the moment, and that's all I could come up with. You know, you guys sit in here with Gary. It's very intimidating. You know, the sweat's pouring down my face. You know, I'm not sure what, you know, I'm stepping up to the big leagues with H&L, and, you know, I choked. What can I say? I choked.
Like the expert you're not.
I was listening. You guys did a good job.
Thank you very much. Very sweet of you to say. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, obviously last night, Game 6 in what has been probably been the best playoff series that I can remember in a fairly long time. You know, there might be other series that come to mind, and, you know, obviously you guys can jump in if you can think of anything. But the overtime in Game 5, not to say that the regulation time in Game 5 wasn't also quite good, but the overtime in Game 5 and then really the last 30 to 40 minutes of that game yesterday has been about some of the best hockey you're ever going to see.
I'm trying to think, like, maybe like the Pittsburgh-Washington battles of a few years back. Those had the Crosby-Ovechkin storyline, but the teams weren't as good.
No, the teams weren't as good.
Like, I mean, you might be going back now to Detroit-Colorado, which were better than this, but just because there's more talent, because you can't concentrate all the talent anymore. You know, you can't have your third line being guys who are like all-stars. But that probably since Colorado-Detroit, it's probably the best series we've seen.
Right, and these are two teams that obviously played last year with the Chicago Blackhawks beating the LA Kings in six games, but these are two teams.
That series was boring.
These are two of the best teams over the last 5 years, arguably over the last, since the lockout, really. And, you know, Pittsburgh's, you know, a good team. Boston's a good team.
No, these two and the Bruins,
These two teams genuinely have a disdain for each other. And, you know, you mentioned Game 5 and the overtime. We saw, you know, it was almost 8 minutes without a whistle. But you see skill and competitiveness at its finest, really. And you see two teams that are going after every single puck. And there's battles in every zone of the ice. And that's the way it should be at this point of the season. And there's no space on that ice. And you have Duncan Keith and Drew Doughty, two of the best defensemen in the NHL,
if not one and two in the NHL.
You know, with apologies to, you know, Shea Weber and Ryan Suter, maybe. But you look at these two teams and what they've had to go through to get here, and the LA Kings could become the first team to ever come back from down 3-0 and win the Stanley Cup. They got to get past Chicago, but we already know there's only been four teams that have come back from 3-0 to win a series, period. And this team just doesn't get flustered. And even last night, they were still pressing, and, you know, it was 4-3, and they were putting tons of pressure on Corey Crawford. And this team just has so much skill. Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson have just added more offense to this team, in addition to Marian Gabrick, who we know has 11 goals, and it just has added more speed, more offensive ability. And it's incredible. And this is great for fans. And I know a lot has been talked, Drew, about, you know, what is the most ideal final? Whether it's Chicago or LA versus the Rangers, we're going to have two huge American markets, and not just that. I mean, when two hockey teams play for the Stanley Cup, it's not markets. I mean, you're not playing, it's not two cities that are playing in the sense that it's about TV and all that. That's the business end of it. It's about how good the hockey is going to be, and I'm sure that the Stanley Cup finals are going to be good, whoever comes out of the West.
You mentioned that LA kept throwing the pressure on after they took after the Blackhawks regained the 4-3 lead. That 4-3 lead was courtesy of Patrick Kane.
Moves it in over the King line, drop pass to Kane along the right board. Kane stopping in the circle, looking for an option. Kane carries it around through the high slot. Kane to the left circle, shoots, he scores! What a shot by Patrick Kane! His second of the game! He carried it all the way around to the top of the left circle, allowed a screen to form in front of Jonathan Quick, and rifled it past him, and the Blackhawks are back on top with 3:45 left in the third period. 4-3 Hawks!
You know, when the Kings took the lead in the third period there, I thought that was it. I was surprised that the Blackhawks were able to mount that comeback. And then to get that fourth goal from Patrick Kane was just, I mean, I thought that the game was going to overtime at that point in time. And then they take that 4-3 lead. And we're just talking about this off air. And you said, who's better than Jonathan Toews, Richard? And I said, Patrick Kane is. But you made a point, and I want you to expand on it. You said that Patrick Kane can't do what he's doing without Jonathan Toews, but Jonathan Toews can do what he's doing even without Patrick Kane.
Yeah, I think that's... Toews is everything for that team. Power play, penalty kill, defensively.
As you said, sorry to cut you off, Richie, as you've said, this is Mark Messier 2.0.
Yeah, Brian Trotche before that, Mark Messier, and this is what he is. And I didn't really see Trotche play much until the end of his career. But, I mean, that's him. And so Toews' ability to shoulder that load allows Patrick Kane to do what he does. He doesn't have to be the guy. I mean, he is a guy. He's the guy, but he's the guy behind Jonathan Toews. And he can have, you know, obviously he didn't start well in this series, but the way he plays, I think, is a great compliment to Toews, but Toews is the rock. And without Toews, I think without Toews, this team's nowhere close to where they are. But without Kane, I think they're closer, but still not where. Like, right. I think Kane is an incredible player. Kane, stick handling and shooting abilities, speed, everything he does, he's unbelievable to watch. But Jonathan Toews is incredible. He wins everything. And you know, the phrase that I think of most when I watch this Blackhawks team and the Kings, it applies to them as well, is never underestimate the heart of a champion. And you watch these guys play, and it's a different level. It is a different level than we were seeing in the Eastern Conference, and a different level than we've seen in many other. Think about Toews, okay? Goal in the finals of 2010 Olympic gold medal game. The performance in the World Juniors before that in the shootout. Goal in the final gold medal game in 2014. Two cups, maybe on his way to a third. Nobody wins that much. It is incredible. And
he's only 25 years old.
It's crazy.
That's scary.
I mean, it's crazy how old he is and how accomplished he is. And if you watch him play, there's nothing overly flashy about what Jonathan Toews does. I mean, he does everything really well, but it's kind of like the great players. Like, you know, Gretzky, like certain, Lemieux is different, but like, you know, Gretzky, certain guys, they don't do it. You know, their vision and other things are obviously, you know, they apply, but they're not the best skater in absolutely in the world, the best shot. They just do everything really, really well. And he's such a leader. I mean, I just think it's so fun to watch a guy like him and a guy like Patrick Kane in their prime. Because that doesn't happen every day. And we've gone through phases of watching like the Joe Thornton era and different guys, even the Ovechkin. Like, these guys aren't on the same level. Not even close to the same level. They just don't want it as much.
And, you know, talking about Toews and Mr. Showtime, Patrick Kane, you can't really not talk about how good Brandon Saad and Andrew Shaw have been on that second line. And we talked about it going into this series. The Chicago Blackhawks have not had a bona fide number two center for a long time now. Mm-hmm. And they've tried Marcus Kruger, they've tried Michael Hanzus, who was one of the only players on that goal. He struggled, but Michael Hanzus, you want to be at most a third line center, preferably a fourth line center, not playing that much. But Brandon Saad has been unbelievable, and obviously there's other players on the Hawks that have picked up their games. Ben Smith has had goals in consecutive nights, But Brandon Saad has been excellent, and he's a guy who is not a high draft pick, and he's been a guy that's gone from the second line, and he's been scratched. And
second rounder,
and you know Andrew Shaw is another guy, 2011 late pick, and you know these two guys have played excellent with Patrick Kane, and they deserve tons of credit. Quenneville deserves a lot of credit for sticking with that line.
He does
actually going to that line, but sticking with it last game, and there was no reason he wouldn't stick with it.
But you know,
but
you
that line
Shaw.
Has been huge.
And when you mentioned Shaw, Izzy, how important has it been him just going to the net?
His presence, just being an irritant.
Huge difference.
I mean, you saw yesterday in that play where, I mean, at the end of the second period, where Quick and Crawford almost had a tete-a-tete at the red line. It's because Shaw, you know, takes an opportunity, goes hard to the net, gets in Jonathan Quick's grill, and Quick doesn't like it.
I love that, by the way.
Doesn't like it.
I love that.
I mean, they start sticking each other, but, you know, Jonathan Quick standing up for his territory. Mm-hmm. The Blackhawks trying to make it difficult on him. They're fighting tooth and nail for every inch of ice. And you can see the teams don't dislike each other. Or, pardon me, do dislike each other.
Good.
But you can see that it's also based on a fantastic respect that they have for one another. This isn't like, you know, you're a little, you know, you're an irritant who isn't in my league, like Lance Stephenson and LeBron James. We were talking about that before the show. It's not that situation.
That's
These are two teams who are desperately trying to win the same prize, who are so equal to each other that it can only end in a Game 7 on Sunday night.
You're right, and you don't think that a guy like Marian Gaborik, who's never had a Stanley Cup, he doesn't want to get to the Stanley Cup Finals and hoist that cup? I mean, there are so many different storylines here, and these are two teams that you mentioned, Richie, that you like that they don't like each other, but that sometimes is overlooked in the sense that you have two teams right now that are just so talented, so skilled, and you know, you mentioned a guy like Andrew Shaw, similar to a guy like Thomas Holmstrom, who not a very good skater, but he's a small guy. Look at the defenseman he's going up. He's competing against Slava Voynov and Willie Mitchell and Matt Green and these big defensemen. He's a small guy, and he has to fight kind of like a Gallagher as well in Montreal. But these guys have been excellent, and the supporting cast always has to be there, because as we saw last year, a guy like Brian Bickell was scoring a lot of goals. He's not scoring at that same pace definitely this series, but I mean, they've got a deep team. You talk about the Kings, and they're better up the middle, but on the wings, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks have quite a bit of depth, and you're seeing that. A guy like Ben Smith has stepped up his game, and I've been really impressed by him. I think everybody who's been watching that series has been impressed. That goal that he scored last night, Jonathan Quick kind of overplayed it, and then he went behind the net and ended up kind of banking it off of his pad. But it's been a great series. And as you mentioned, this Game 7, I don't think this is going to be anything but a classic.
When we come back, we will preview Game 7. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
And Smith is knocked off the puck. Loose puck in front. Brown fires. Crawford makes a save. Richardson, the left corner, fires. Crawford, the chest save. Dowdy for the left corner. He's going to run out of time. The Blackhawks have tied this series at 3 games apiece. What incredible resolve, determination, and will shown by the Chicago Blackhawks to erase a 3-1 deficit to the Los Angeles Kings. They've tied this series 3 games apiece, and we're going back to the United Center on Sunday night for game number 7. Hawks win tonight 4-3 here in L.A.
A fitting end to game 6, because I know that hockey fans throughout the world are, you know, happy to see this series go 7 games, 10 games, 12 games. Mm-hmm. It could just play 82 games against these two teams, and it might end 41 games apiece. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Game 7 tomorrow night back at the United Center. The Blackhawks were flying back to Chicago in any event. They were either flying back after Game 6 to pack up their lockers, or they were flying back to Game 6 with all the momentum and playing Game 7 on home ice. Can the Kings go into Chicago knowing that they've blown a 3-1 lead and take that game, or is this Chicago's game to win?
No, I mean, it's a toss-up, Drew. These teams are so close. And the Kings have come back from 3-0. There's nothing this team hasn't faced before either. You're looking at two heavyweights. You're looking at a 15-round battle back in the East at 15 rounds. You're looking at a 12-round battle now. And I do think that home ice will be a factor, though. I thought that home ice was an advantage for the Blackhawks in Game 5. Not that it wasn't for the Kings yesterday, but you are able to dictate matchups a little bit more. And with the depth of these teams, I think that's mitigated a little bit. But, you know, you play the whole season for Game 7 at your home rink. And I think that there's going to be, you know, you're going to be able to try and exploit some issues, especially as I think with the Blackhawks starting to roll a little bit more depth-wise, you know, they're starting to, you mentioned Shaw before, and you know, Patrick Sharp was a great chance yesterday, but if you can get a couple of these guys going, then you feel a little more comfortable in some other matchups, because they have loaded up a fair amount of ice time on some of their big horses here.
Yeah, and we know that the Kings now are going to be in their third Game 7 in a row, and fatigue plays a factor here.
For sure.
And Daryl Sutter knows that, and even though Drew Doughty, I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think he was somewhere around 42 minutes, something like that, in Game 5. So obviously fatigue isn't as big of a factor maybe as some are making it out to be, but it is going to be a game where both teams have already been rolling lines, and you're going to see that they're going to conserve energy. And, you know, Drew mentioned this a few segments back. Once these two teams, especially last night, they get a feel for each other a little bit, and you can see that then they open it up. And it's to me, it's truly remarkable about these two teams, the Chicago Blackhawks and the LA Kings, that they are able to play a back-and-forth game so well and still look excellent defensively. And we talked about, you know, they're missing Robin Regier, and that's a big loss for the LA Kings. But they're still so deep on defense, and I think Jake Muzzin, who struggled earlier in the playoffs, especially against the Anaheim Ducks, the San Jose Sharks, and even against the Ducks, he's really stepped up his game offensively. And I think an element to this series that we have to talk about is the amount of defense that offense you're getting from defensemen.
Absolutely.
You're talking last night, Game 5, you had Brent Seabrook and Johnny Oduya, and then yesterday, obviously, Drew Doughty and Duncan Keith, and you saw Alex Martinez got the goal in the third period there. You're getting basically offense from every possible angle here in this series, and you're seeing, you know, a lot of play down low and then goes back to the defenseman. You know, it's a real treat to watch. And it's, I'm with Richie. I don't think momentum really carries over. Sure, I guess Chicago's won the last two games, and, you know, they're forcing LA to come back to their arena where they've been successful. But the LA Kings, after you come back from 3-0, they didn't have anything to prove.
Yeah.
What do they have to prove? They won the Stanley Cup a couple years ago. They went to six games against the Hawks last year in the conference finals. This is a team with the veterans, Kopitar, Carter, and they've been there. This doesn't faze them, and they can even be down a couple of goals in a game, and they can come back. This team cannot be fazed. And the Hawks are a team, too, that type of pressure, they feed off of it.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't think there's pressure. You know, sometimes you see Pittsburgh against the Rangers, Crosby, will he win a cup? Will he get to the next level? Will he score, et cetera? Pressure's on Pittsburgh there. I look at this game tomorrow, and I see the pressure on both sides equally. Yeah. I totally agree with Ezzy. I don't see there being one side or the other needing to prove something. If the Hawks lose, well, they won two cups of the past, you know, few years, and nobody's going to ever think that this is a bad performance or tarnish their legacy. Same for the Kings. I mean, two conference finals in a row, winning the cup before that, losing to the Hawks. I mean, you're not going to tarnish their legacy either. Maybe if you lose to the Hawks again, you know, next year or something like that, then you look at, okay, that's obviously, there's a level there that you never got to. So from that effect, maybe, but I don't feel like they play with that in mind. And the series is so even because of the coaching as well, and we talked to Jim Fox last week about the contrasts in styles, but yet the effectiveness of both coaches. Chicago, though, in terms of style on the ice, not just coaching style, but style on the ice, Chicago's going to want to push the pace because they excel when they're pushing the pace. They excel when they're creating chances a little bit more. And that's what they're going to try and do. And you know, you look at the scores in these games, 4 goals the first game, 8 goals the second, 7-7, 9-7. I mean, it's crazy. But the Kings, and they've scored in the playoffs, don't get me wrong, and we know in the regular season that was a different story. We've heard that before when they won the cup. But the Kings would like this last game to probably be 2-1, and based on the way the series is going, 3-2. Chicago says 4-3-5-4. We'll do it all day. And I think you'll see them try to do that, especially at home. The fans, that will have an effect, getting them up. That place is crazy to play in. I have never been there before, but if all you can see it on TV. I mean, LA gets loud, but Chicago gets real loud. And the ratings in Chicago are through the roof. I don't know if you've seen it. The city of Chicago has gotten behind this team. L.A. has great fans, but the city of L.A., I don't think, has gotten behind this team. And I think these are all things that are going to have an effect in the Game 7 third period.
Is there anything either coach is saying to their players at this point in time? Or is it, I mean, you know, what can they say? Can they look at video and make any adjustments at this point?
For sure, they can make adjustments on video, but I don't know what they say if that has that much of an effect.
Yeah, I mean, are they pretty much at this point in time, look, they've played six games, you're three games apiece. You're really splitting hairs if you say one team is better than the other team.
Right.
Is it pretty much drop the puck on Sunday, best on best, balls to the wall, let's go?
Well, that's the beauty of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And sure, there are obviously strategies and video that they'll look at and try to improve things, Drew. But this, when it comes down to a Game 7, and you're as you mentioned, these are two teams that have gone back and forth, traded wins. That stuff, to me, it's to answer your question, to me, it's more about the in-game management. And Richie mentioned having the home ice change. Joel Quenneville's got that. He can get the matchups that he wants. But for me, if you look at kind of what Sutter's thinking, sure, he's probably thinking, okay, they're getting a little bit too much, too many shots through. And we mentioned the offense from guys like Oduya and Seabrook and Keith. Mm-hmm. But you're probably talking about how do we shut down Patrick Kane, Brandon Saad, and Andrew Shaw.
And you got Taves to deal with.
And then you got Taves to deal with. So Daryl Sutter knows that, and he's seen all the chances they've got. And if you're L.A., you're obviously hoping that Jonathan Quick stands on his head and keeps the game a little bit low scoring and doesn't give up four-plus goals like he has the last couple games. But, you know, the momentum thing is there's no right or wrong answer, right? And when you talk about these two teams and what's going to happen in the game, I think you put 10 people in a room, 5 people are going to say, oh, the Hawks are for sure going to take this one. They've mm-hmm. come back in mm-hmm. Game 7 in the United Center. And then you'll say, oh, the Kings, they really get it done in Game 7. So, I mean, that's the beauty of it. You drop the puck, and then we'll see what happens. And the way things have been going, like we mentioned last segment, there's no reason to believe why this game won't be maybe an overtime game or at the very least a one-goal game, because there's so little that separates these two clubs. There really is. And, you know, to me, the greatest part is that they weren't the teams that were the best regular season teams. They're two teams that both had problems in the first round. You know, people forget the Hawks were down 2-0 to the Blues, too. They came back and won mm-hmm, four games, mm-hmm. too. So, I mean, it's great. It's great for hockey. I mean, I have a smile on my face every night watching these games. And broken fridge aside, watching that overtime. I mean, really, you can't leave. You can't not watch this. You can't leave your couch, like or wherever you are, because you might miss something. Like, it's the hockey is that good. And that's not to say that the Rangers Habs series wasn't good.
Oh, come on.
This series, Rangers Habs series, garbage.
I'm just saying, I wouldn't say garbage, but it's not. This series, I think the Rangers Habs has been the 10th and 12th best
teams in the league.
It has probably been the best series, I'd say, in for sure the last 5 years.
If you're Quenneville or Sutter, are you pinpointing one player on either team and saying that guy can't be the guy who beats us, or is that just almost?
I think he makes a good point in terms of, I don't think it's one guy, Drew, because there's so many guys on both teams, and that's why they're so good. But I do think he has a really good point in terms of the defense, offense from defense. I mean, a guy, you know, losing Duncan Keith off the pinch yesterday on the pass from Kane can't happen. You know, I mean, Martinez is a little bit different the way he gets into the middle there, and Doughty creating some space, and Brent Seabrook hasn't played actually that well, but being able to limit the defense, the offense from defense, and getting in, dropping back maybe a little bit further, because if you're covering high up on the defenseman sometimes and then you fall asleep, the guy can get behind you. If you drop a little bit lower, even if you fall asleep, there's less room to move in the house, as they call it. So I think that's going to be something that both coaches harp on. If you're going to get beat, make sure you're getting beat and you're in the right, you know, that whole quote-unquote cliche, junk the right side of the puck, but make sure you're lower in the offense, in the defensive zone, than higher, because the defensemen here are pinching, and not only are they pinching, because defensemen can pinch, but they're pinching with such speed. I mean, Duncan Keith goes from 0 to 60 as well as anybody in the National Hockey League, and he's so quick. Boom, boom, gone. Drew Doughty is not going to be that kind of guy, but he'll make three moves around you, and you won't even know what happened. So you have to be aware of your surroundings, and all these guys on both teams can create offense from the back end, and that's going to be something I think both coaches harp on heading into Game 7.
Let's head to break. Game 7 tomorrow night. going to be a great one. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.